The following AA talk was recorded at the weekly Never Had a Legal Drink group of Alcoholics Anonymous. The opinions of the speaker do not necessarily represent those of the group or AA as a whole. Rather, this story represents one person's experience. If you have a desire to stop drinking and would like help, contact Alcoholics Anonymous at www.aa.org, or you can find AA listed in your local telephone book. AA's Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
My name is Keith. My name is Keith Kessler, and I am grateful to be an alcoholic. And it's a privilege to share at any Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and it's a special privilege for me to share at this meeting. This meeting is really dear to my heart, and there's so many of you that I know and love, and this is my home away from home. I stole my first drink when I was about 12. I stole it out of my parents' liquor cabinet. I took a jelly jar and took a little of it out of every bottle and mixed it in and took it down to the playground and took a big pull on it, and immediately this amazing thing happened. This warmth exploded in my chest and down to my fingers, and this soft kind of fuzz descended over my face, and suddenly I could look the world in the eye and be at perfect peace and ease, and all the anxiety in my life disappeared, and I was home. I was safe. I was in the world, you know, and that moment was over four decades ago, and I still remember it like it was yesterday. You know, there are lots of other exciting things that have happened in my life since then, but there's no moment really that stands out as the moment of my first drink. So that tells me right there that my relationship with alcohol is different from most other things in my life. I pursued that feeling for the next 20 years, basically, and never found it again. And in school, I had kept a bottle of Bacardi 151 in my locker and used to take pulls on it, you know, between classes. And I thought that was normal behavior. I thought it was normal drinking, you know, keeping a bottle of 151 proof rum in your locker, you know, visiting your locker between classes. Didn't everybody do that? No, everybody didn't do that, but I did that. I was an alcoholic. You know? Amazingly, I got through school okay. I got in a little bit of trouble because I was a slacker. And there's this poster of Charlie Brown that I used to see when I in the candy store near my house. He's on the pitcher's mound, and it says there's no heavier burden than a great potential. And that was me. I had a great potential, and I had a great potential as an alcoholic too, and I lived up to that. So I drank and used other substances through high school and into college, and I got into a prestigious engineering school here in New York City, and went to got my first report card. It was really, really bad, and I said, oh, okay, the drugs must stop. But you know, alcohol, of course, wasn't a drug because it was legal, and easily obtained, so I would continue to drink my way through college, and all my friends would use drugs of other kinds, and I would look down on them because they were drug addicts, you know. But I was drinking my alcohol, my drinking became very pretentious in college because I had to drink like Johnny Walker Black, you know. I had to drink like expensive top shelf stuff, and I had to look down on other people was the bottom line, because I had no self-esteem, and unless I could find a way to look down on you, I couldn't feel good about myself. So I drank my way through college, and there's some interesting things that happened there. One was I had a I had tremendous enablers in school. One was this math professor that I missed the final because I was hungover. And then I showed up, and he let me make it up, but I showed up in his office drunk, and he walked me through it, you know? And I had, I was babysitting computers for a bank at night. I showed up drunk one night, and security guards noticed this. And, you know, international bank, when you're running the computers for them at night, they really don't like that when you show up drunk. So I did a very clever thing for an alcoholic. I told the truth. I said, yes, I was drunk. I went to a party after school, and I drank a little too much, and I didn't realize it. I knew how important it was to do the job, so I came in and did my work, and it won't happen again. And I got away. So I finished school, and I got a job working for a company where I had to have perfect externals. It was a job with security clearances and stuff like that, and I put on a suit every day. I hated it, but it made a lot of money. That part I liked, and I got married and had a kid and moved to California. It was awful, but I made a lot of money, and that part I liked. And by the way, I married an alcoholic. I met her at a party, and she brought over a plate of food and a glass of wine, and it was lust at first sight. We had a really it was a difficult time. Two active alcoholics in a marriage is not a good thing. So it wasn't working out, and I moved back to New York and kind of sent her, and I have a son, and sent her and him away so I could drink the way I wanted to, and then I became a club rat in the downtown, and hit all the clubs, and that's what I did. I mean, I went to work still drunk in the morning, got into work, had a hangover, didn't know that's what was going on, was in withdrawal from alcohol all day at work, got a little bit of work done, then came home, grabbed a six-pack of beer that was really cheap, piss water beer of a brand I won't even name, it's so embarrassing, and drank that on the way home, a couple of beers up the steps, went to sleep, got up and would go to the galleries and clubs in East Village, and I would drink beer in the shower. I remember that. I bet I'm not alone. I bet there's somebody else in this room that drank beer in the shower. But I don't think there's too many normal drinkers that drink beer in the shower, but I drank beer in the shower. And other substances started to enter my story again at this point, and particularly one that was really just an alcohol sponge. It just enabled me to drink more and more alcohol, so I would use this other substance, and it reminds me of the old Rolaids commercial where it says Rolaids absorbs 47 times its excess weight in stomach acid. Like, this substance absorbed like 100 times its weight in alcohol, and I could just drink more and more when I took this other substance, so I used it quite frequently, and it got to be expensive, though, you know. I had to go to the ATM machine and get money to go give to my dealer so I could have the substance so I could drink all night. And I thought it would be just a lot easier if the ATM machine just dispensed this stuff. You know, and by that time, I was just so far gone that this idea made sense. So the insanity of my alcoholism was really beginning to take over and twist and distort my thinking. I mentioned at the beginning that I stole my first drink, and that's a very important thing for me to recall, because from the minute that I picked up my first drink as a child, I compromised my morals and values. I stole from my parents to have my first drink. And the things that I did to continue to drink were basically lie, cheat, steal, get alcohol and other things by whatever means was necessary. If you stood between me and my getting what I needed, well, you had to go. And as I descended deeper and deeper into my alcoholism, people became simply objects for my pleasure and for my use. And if I didn't have a use for you, I didn't have a use for you. I became very self-centered, very narcissistic, not a nice guy, you know? And I had been a nice guy when I was a kid, and I wanted to be a nice guy, and I hated myself because I knew I wasn't a nice guy anymore. And I knew that I didn't really care about people anymore, and I didn't understand why. I didn't know yet that I had alcoholism. At this point, people were starting to tell me that my drinking was maybe a problem, and that maybe if I didn't drink so much, I might be happier. And I was happier not having them around. But eventually, the message did start to sink in, and I started to try and control my drinking, and discovered to my horror that I could not. I could stop drinking for a day or two, and then I would get nightmares and sweats, and I'd have to drink again. And I could quit drinking for maybe 3 days, and then I'd have to drink again. And try as I might, I couldn't stop drinking. And this really terrified me, because I had always lived with the comfortable delusion that I could stop drinking anytime I felt like it. And suddenly, I felt like stopping drinking, and I could not do that. And it really frightened me. A couple of months before I noticed that I wasn't able to stop drinking, I was sitting in a loft with my then-girlfriend, who was a fashion designer in East Village, and it was her summer for her, 15 minutes of fame, and we were riding around in limos and stuff like that, and painting clothes in her loft. And there was an article in the Village Voice about A's 50th anniversary and the big party that they had, I guess it was in Montreal. And they had the 12 questions in the 12 questions pamphlet, and I was reading these 12 questions while I was drinking scotch. I was sharing a bottle of Dewar's with my then-girlfriend and reading about Alcoholics Anonymous and saying, wow, this AA is great for those poor slobs who need it. Pour me another one, dear. And I'm reading the 12 questions, and I got eight of them right. Then I went back, and when it said that if you got three or more, you might have a problem, I went back and found reasons to change all the answers so that I didn't pass the test. But I also read, they had gone actually into the Perry Street Workshop meeting and written in about what an AA meeting was like. And somebody in the Perry Street Workshop, I hope I meet her someday, she shared that what she did was she didn't pick up that first drink just for one day. And they wrote about this in the newspaper, very anonymously, appropriately. We have this thing we do called public information, where we cooperate with the press when they want to know about Alcoholics Anonymous. And the press was invited in to write about an AA meeting. And in reading this newspaper article, I found out about Alcoholics Anonymous, and I found out that there was a place where people didn't pick up their first drink just for one day. And there came a time when I didn't want to have a drink for one day, and I remembered that Alcoholics Anonymous was a place where you did. Now, I was actually employed as a rocket scientist at the time, and I could not figure out how to not drink. But you guys knew how to not drink. And I came to my first meeting and heard... My first meeting happened to be, I got sober on Memorial Day weekend with both of the people who were still tolerating me were out of town. And that loneliness of the alcoholic really set in. I knew that I could get through the weekend without drinking, and I didn't want to drink. And I remembered that you guys in AA didn't drink, and I had this brilliant plan, and it went something like this. I don't really want to drink by myself because I know that'll make me an alcoholic, and I don't want to be an alcoholic because then I'll have to stop drinking. But you AA guys, you don't drink for like one day at a time. So let me go to one of these AA meetings and not drink by myself so I won't be an alcoholic. And then when the weekend's over and my friends are back, I can drink as much as I want and I won't be an alcoholic. And that was the reasoning. And I went to a meeting, and it was a birthday meeting, and these people shared that they had like 30 days, no, I think, no, 90 days, excuse me, 90 days, a year, 3 years, and there was some liar with 15 years, so they had 15 years, and I knew that was impossible. It's not impossible, by the way, I can tell you from my own experience. That was May 25th, 1986, and I haven't had a drink since then, and that was my plan. My plan was to not drink for that one day and to drink the next, but a better idea happened. And I left that meeting walking home, and I asked myself a question in my head, and it went something like this. Do you think, perhaps, hypothetically speaking, in the subjunctive, of course, that it could be that you might have a problem with alcohol? And this voice came out of the heavens and went, yes! It was like the Cecil B. DeMille voice of God, telling me. And I asked the question that like meekly and timidly, and the answer came resoundingly. And I'm really grateful for that because right after my first AA meeting, I knew what my problem was. My problem was alcohol. And And I had no doubt that I was an alcoholic since my first AA meeting. And I'm really blessed with that. I've never had to go out and test the waters. And so I wanted this thing. And I wanted this thing. And, you know, they talk about, I forget what they talk about in the big book, but the idea is like how only the dying, you know, can grasp onto it. And I wanted this thing, so I worked the steps, you know. And I knew already I was powerless over alcohol. My life would become unmanageable. I knew that, you know. And I knew I couldn't stop drinking. So, and I had tried. And so I was kind of, hoping against hope that you guys had an answer to my problem, because I knew I didn't. So I was, you know, more willing to believe that you guys had a solution to my alcohol problem, because I know I didn't, you know. So I was willing to believe that AA, a power greater than me, could restore me insanity. I could see that it was working for you. So, you know, and I came here. I walked through the door. I walked through the door and I said, help, you know. And for me, that's when I turned my will and my life over to the care of something bigger than me, you know. When I asked Alcoholics Anonymous to help me with my drinking problem. And I did like some of the things you actually suggested, you know. Out of your experience, you told me things that work for you, and I actually tried some of them, like, you know, not hanging out in bars unless I had a good reason, you know, getting rid of the booze that was in my house, you know, things like that. And I tried some of those things, and they worked. I did a fourth step. I did a fourth step in my first, I think, 90 days. I did the first fourth step, and immediately doing my first fourth step was showed me some of my character defects. Because first of all, even though I did it in my first 90 days, I did procrastinate. I wanted to do it earlier, you know. And I got a book, you know. I got a nice little composition book, you know. And I spent a lot of time coloring in the little white parts of the composition book, you know. But you know, picking up the pen to do a fourth step revealed, you know, my defect of procrastination, you know. Then I wanted it to be perfect, fourth step. It had to be perfect, you know. So then there was the perfectionism, you know. And then it had to be the best fourth step ever, you know. So there was my grandiosity. You know, so just getting a notebook and a pen right there, you know, started to reveal some of my defects of character. You know, and I did a fourth step, and I did it as outlined in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had gotten a sponsor that was, I got the sponsor because he was like a cool punk rock star, you know. And anyway, but it turned out that he reminded me of me. And I did a fifth step with him, you know. And when I did the fifth step with this guy, he kept on saying, you know, you're what's the defect? And I said, I don't know. And he said, you're selfish. You know, and whatever it was, you're selfish. And I kind of got it. Like, I didn't get it that time. I got it like about 5 years later. I'm selfish. And I'm obsessed with self. And as it says in much of our literature, that's the root of my problems. So at this point, my sponsor drank. I don't think it had anything to do with my fourth step, but he did drink. And I got a resentment about that. And so I started doing this crazy version of the sixth step called, we're entirely ready to have Keith remove all these defects of character. It does not work. And for a couple of years, I didn't have a sponsor. And one day... But you know, not having spot, it's still possible to work the steps without a sponsor, I found out. Because one night I was going to the Soho meeting, and I wasn't going to the Soho meeting for the message, I was going there for the Friday night meat market, and I'm human, what can I say? And you know, things didn't go my way, let's put it that way. And I was disgusted with myself, and I was standing in the middle of let's see, I think it was McDougal Street. And I had a seven-step, and I had a seven-step experience of the raving street lunatic variety, where it was like, I can't do this anymore. I can't do this anymore. Take it. And you know, I turned all. I asked. That was my seventh step, where I humbly asked my higher power to remove all my defects of character. I was willing to be a different person. I was willing to have, you know, all the little games that I ran, you know, for myself, be taken away. You know, and I got a sponsor after that. You know. Because I was willing to have all my little games that I was running taken away. And I did an eighth step. Now, when I first came into my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and I saw the steps up on the wall, and I saw the eighth step, I had this fantasy of, like, trees being floated down the Amazon to paper mills and to make all the paper for my eighth step list. And... Grandiosity is one of my character defects. But it turned out that when I did finally make my 8-step list, it took all 20 minutes. And I did it one night when I couldn't sleep, and I called my sponsor, and he says, "Time you do your 8-step list. Call me back when it should take you a half hour. Call me back when you're done." It took all 20 minutes to fit on on one sheet of 8.5 by 11 paper. And basically, it had family members, employers, girlfriends, and schools. And that was pretty much it, you know. And kind of anybody that ever had any drugs around me. Those were the people that went on my amends list, I've been sober for 23 years. I've done my 9-step. It took a long time. There were a lot of amends I had to make, but I've made them all. And the thing about it is, I can walk down the street, you know, and there's nobody that I have to, you know, hide from. There's nobody. I can walk down the street with my head held high. Not with my nose held high, with my head held high. You know, and I'm my own person. And I don't owe anything to anybody. And except the dignity and respect that I owe everybody, you know. And that's a great feeling, because I used to hide from people. I had a stack of sorry cards next to my bed that I, you know, I didn't know what I did the night before, but I knew it wasn't good, you know. And I sent you a note. That was my idea of making amends before I came out here, you know. Yes, I was an asshole last night. Please hang out with me again. No. But that's not the way that I do things today. You know, 10, 11, and 12, well, guess what? I'm still wrong. And sometimes I admit it sooner, and sometimes I admit it later, and it's probably more important that I admit it to myself than you. I can't admit it to you until I admit it to myself in any case. And sometimes I don't like to, still, I don't like to admit that I'm wrong. You know, I still don't laugh. Don't laugh, Fran. You too. Shut up. I've got something going on where I really need to admit I'm wrong, and my friends want me to, but I'm not doing it yet. I'm not done yet. But I'll bottom out on it when it's time. And make amends for it, probably. Prayer and meditation is amazing. You know, they say that alcoholism is a low-level spiritual search, and I think it was for me, and I did all these other substances, too, that made me see pretty colors and hear strange sounds and smell what you were saying and everything. And synesthesia is wonderful. But, you know, I was looking for some spiritual experience, you know, and I found it here. You know, the 12 steps for me are a machine that produces a spiritual experience, you know, and I found it here. And today I have this very interesting meditation practice. It's called snorkeling. And I live on Maui. I'm lucky enough to do that. And I get my fins on, and I get my mask on, and I go in the water, and they see pretty fish. And I go, "Nice job, God," you know, and that's called conscious contact. And I feel happy and smiling inside, and I'm relaxed, you know, and I make conscious contact, you know. And I have knowledge of God's will for me today, which is to be happy, joyous, and free. I'm not happy, joyous, and free at every moment, but, you know, that's the only thing about God's will that I'm absolutely sure of. It says so in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We are sure God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. And I'm sure of that today. You know, if I'm not happy, joyous, and free, then I better check those 9-step promises, because they're a good inventory-taking tool. And if any one of them is not nailed down, something's going on I need to look at. 12-step real quick, you know. I can never give away what was given to me, you know, but I've tried. You know, I've been involved in service. I was involved in general service, and that was really, I was very heavily involved in general service for a decade, and then it was time to take a back seat and let somebody else do it. There's this thing called principle rotation. And I really got to learn about the concepts and the traditions and to have them be in my life, to have them be principles by which I run my life, you know, and you know, being self-supporting through my own contributions is a good idea, you know. And not taking any personally punitive actions is a good idea, too, you know. And these other spiritual principles besides the steps, you know, help me to stay happy, joyous, and free, and to not cause too much wreckage in the lives of others around me. And I learned them by getting involved in general service and also service to young peoples. I got involved in the Ikipah bid and hosting when it was in New York, and that was a trip. And, you know, oh yeah, it's important to dress appropriately when you speak at an AA meeting. And I'm going to be there. But service is an amazing thing. It shows me my character defects, and I have many, and gives me principles for living, and it helps me be just a better person. And I'm glad I have that tool too. So I think I've spoken my 25 minutes, and I'm going to stop there. So thank you for letting me share and seeing this open.
The preceding AA talk was recorded at the weekly Never Had a Legal Drink group of Alcoholics Anonymous. The opinions of the speaker do not necessarily represent those of the group or AA as a whole. Rather, this story represents one person's experience. If you have a desire to stop drinking and would like help, contact Alcoholics Anonymous at www.aa.org, or you can find AA listed in your local telephone book.